This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Steinway & Sons is a proud sponsor of Between the Keys, featuring Jed Distler. More information about Steinway & Sons, makers of handcrafted pianos since 1853, is available at www.steinway.com. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and I welcome you to Between the Keys, and this is our 100th episode.
I am Maud, the piano Ford, but they call me Piano. Soft and forte means loud. I can play as soft or as loud as I please.
Gosh, it's kind of strange to hear this recording again. I have not heard this probably since I was 4 or 5 years old. I really loved this. It's from a LP that was called A Child's Introduction to the Orchestra, and it was only as an adult that I realized that the composer was Alec Wilder. Pretty sophisticated children's music, but I have to say that as I was growing up, all kinds of music passed through my brain, and a lot of it wound up sticking for life, for better or worse. Now, of course, growing up in the 1960s, the Beatles had a great impact on me, but then I became rebellious and I started following Frank Zappa, who we are hearing now. And then I got into some of Frank Zappa's cohorts, like Captain Beefheart. And one of my guilty pleasures was an album called An Evening with Wildman Fisher. Well, of course, Wildman Fisher didn't really have an influence on me, but I just needed an excuse to play Wildman Fisher on a classical music radio station. But I also loved the Grateful Dead when they took off and improvised freely. But then I discovered Miles Davis. Although I was studying classical music all this time when I was a kid, it didn't really come into focus until high school when I went to the Juilliard pre-college, and my principal composition teacher there was Andrew Thomas, with whom I studied privately after college. It's just a little taste of an amazing marimba concerto called Loving Mad Tom, composed by Andrew Thomas, who was my principal composition teacher. So I've had a lot of important influences and mentors, and I've talked about them in depth on previous episodes. Certainly the great jazz pianist Bill Evans, for example, or my old friend the musicologist Alan Evans had a great deal of impact on my thinking. One major, major influence on me was and remains Dick Hyman, who was the subject of a previous Between the Keys episode. He was probably the first working musician and really truly notable professional I had ever met. I was only, I think, 8 years old. And he kind of took me under his wing. He took me to recording sessions. He let me watch as he sat in his home studio writing commercial arrangements or making demo recordings. And he really was the person who gave me my musical work ethic and kind of professional blueprint. He also taught me how to master the difficult style of stride piano, which is kind of a first cousin to ragtime. Let's hear Dick Hyman's recording now of James P. Johnson's classic stride piano showpiece, Caprice Rag. Music by James P. Johnson, Caprice Rag, with my great mentor, Dick Hyman, at the piano. I had an excellent classical piano teacher in college whose name was Stanley Locke. He had studied with Artur Schnabel and also Olga Samaroff at Juilliard, who was also the teacher of William Capel, Alexis Weissenberg, Raymond Lewenthal, and many others. And Stanley often talked about his teachers to me. But there was another classical pianist who was kind of a mystery man and kind of an underground figure named Robert Helps. He also was a composer, and I heard him play quite a lot in the 70s, and he had a way of playing, an approach to the piano that was so relaxed yet intense at the same time. And despite the beautiful sounds he made at the piano, I always seemed to hear the music first and the piano second. So let's listen to Bob Helps play Leopold Godowsky's Study Number 45, based on one of Chopin's three Nouvelles Etudes. Thank you. Leopold Godofsky's Study No. 45 after Chopin with pianist Robert Helps. That was from a live 1997 recording from what turned out to be Bob's last New York recital, which I actually had the honor of producing. Bob was a big aficionado of the great romantic pianists of the past, and he collected their old recordings on 78s. And when I was in college, I also became obsessed with what I like to call dead pianists. When the New York Times critic Harold C. Schoenberg gave a lecture about these pianists at my college, one of the selections he played was a 1941 recording by Benno Moiseevich of Liszt's Concert Etude La Leggerezza. Moiseevich studied with the legendary Theodor Leschetizky, as did Arthur Schnabel, as did Ignaz Friedman, as did Ignaz Paderewski, and hundreds of other luminaries. But this recording by Moiseevich was, for me, a real life changer, and I envy anyone hearing it for the first time. Thank you. music of Franz Liszt, the Concert Etude in F minor, La Leggerezza, performed by Benno Moiseevich. That's a 1941 recording that opened the whole world of historic romantic pianists to me when I was a student. Just to remind you that I am Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and you are listening to Between the Keys. I'm devoting this 100th episode of Between the Keys to musicians and performances that had a major impact on me, not necessarily in chronological order. In fact, I'm going to fast forward to the late 1990s, not too long after I first started writing CD reviews professionally. I met David Hurwitz, who is a fantastic writer, and he's the editor, one of the two editors of ClassicsToday.com, for whom I've been writing since 1999. And Dave Hurwitz's knowledge of orchestral recordings and orchestral repertoire is staggering beyond belief. And the first time I went to Dave's apartment, he played me a recording of the Magic Fire music from Wagner's Die Walküre, in a performance that is so over the top, it almost sounds like there are 100 harps, a wordless choir. Of course, there isn't, but it sounds like one. There are all kinds of bells and whistles in this performance. It's the Houston Symphony, conducted by Leopold Stokowski. And I suppose this recording is not so much of an influence as a guilty pleasure, but there you have it. I really treasure this. Well, if that isn't over-the-top orchestra playing and conducting, I don't know what. The magic fire music from Wagner's Die Walküre, with Leopold Stokowski leading the Houston Symphony. When I was 15 years old, I heard for the first time a recording by the legendary jazz pianist Art Tatum. And it's this recording that really opened my ears and really made me want to be serious about the piano. This is his 1954 recording of the standard tune Back Home Again in Indiana. At the piano. That was Back Home Again in Indiana. When I was an adult, I actually transcribed many of Art Tatum's improvised solos into notation for a book, and I also did a bunch of Tatum solos for the great classical pianist Stephen Mayer. Now, there's one little sequence in Indiana that I was never quite able to figure out from the moment I heard it. It's this one here. Now, probably now I could sit down and listen a few times and figure out what is going on, but I decided I'm going to leave this little sequence untranscribed, so to speak, because I don't want to lose the freshness of discovering this recording for the first time. I also wish that I could hear Cecil Taylor play solo piano again for the first time. I heard him for the first time again when I was 15. It was Carnegie Hall, July 2nd, 1972. I had never heard him before. I did not know what to expect. And I still have yet to encounter such an original, such a committed, such an immensely capable, and such a self-contained and utterly uncopyable musician as Cecil Taylor.
Thank you.
pianist Cecil Taylor an excerpt from his 1980 studio release on the MPS label called Fly, 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 Fly. Well, I suppose I have a lot of audacity and a lot of nerve to follow Cecil Taylor with my own piano playing and my own composition. This is a transcription that I did for solo piano and a little bit of speaking at the beginning, which is inspired by James Brown's great 1971 hit song, Get Up, I Feel Like a Sex Machine.
Can I take it to the bridge? 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 Can I take it to? Can I take it to the bridge? Can I take it to the bridge?
That was yours truly, Jed Distler. I was playing piano, and that was my own composition, a transcription that I did inspired by James Brown's 1971 hit song, Get Up, I Feel Like a Sex Machine. That's from a live recording made at the Manhattan School of Music in February 2015 from my personal archive.
Should I take him to the bridge? Go ahead. Take him on to the bridge.
Take him to the bridge.
Can I take him to the bridge?
Yeah.
Take him to the bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Hit me now. Come on. Stay on the scene.
I want to bring up another important composer and pianist who had, and still has, a great impact on me. That is Frederick Jevsky. I first met him in the 1970s, and when I first heard him, the idea of a composer who not only was a great classical pianist, but also a great improviser, made me think, you know, maybe I can be like Frederick Jevsky when I grow up. And I more or less followed that kind of trajectory, the composer-pianist tradition. Frederick and I shared a concert together recently, and we concluded the concert with a little off-the-cuff improvisation on two pianos, which I would like to share with you right now.
Thank you.
the composer and pianist Frederick Zhevsky, plus yours truly, the composer and pianist Jed Distler, playing a two-piano improvisation. That was from a concert in November 2016. When I listen to that, I can't really tell who's playing what, but I can tell you that in this final selection, not only can you distinguish every instrument and every instrumental line, but you will also realize that this orchestral performance is very much like listening to chamber music on the highest level. And this is a performance that really, really had an impact on me. For me, the finale of Mozart's last symphony, his so-called Jupiter Symphony, number 41 in C major, is one of the most intellectually and emotionally fulfilling moments of music that I know. And this music continues to keep me humble and awestruck as a composer to this day. This performance I'm going to share with you is completely worthy of Mozart's genius. It's the Cleveland Orchestra under the great George Sell.
Thank you.
music of Mozart, the finale of his Symphony No. 41, the Jupiter Symphony, George Sell conducting the Cleveland Orchestra. This is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and on this 100th episode of Between the Keys, I have been featuring music and musicians that have been very important to me throughout my life. Take from that what you will, but thank you for letting me share all of this with you. And also thank you for all of your support and feedback over the past few years. Look for my weekly newsletters on Facebook about upcoming Between the Keys episodes, and check out my complete Between the Keys playlists on my own website, www.jeddistler.com. And also go to wwfm.org to hear webcasts of previous episodes. I would really love it if you can spread the word about the Classical Network and Between the Keys. Send emails to your friends, post something on Facebook, or send out tweets at 3 in the morning. Actually, don't send out tweets at 3 in the morning, but do tune in next week at this time for Between the Keys. This is Jed Distler, and I thank you again for listening. This show is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.